Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Wednesday, July 7th, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, ChickenWhisperer.com. That's ChickenWhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear, and of course, get information about any contest we have here on the radio show. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join the live chicken chat that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country and, in fact, around the world. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click that little orangey-colored Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. You'll see it. It's right there. It says Chat Now. Click on that button. Chat room should open up just below. So scroll down. You'll see it open up there. Come on in. Register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name, just like the rest of us. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, come in, ask our guests questions, meet some new friends, and have a great time talking about backyard poultry and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Also, would like to remind you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Mention the coupon code WHISPER and get 10% off your entire order. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com. McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today. No Super Chickens here, just Andy the Chicken Whisperer and my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, all around great person, Pat Foreman. Welcome back, Pat.
Hey, good to be here, Whisper, as always. Boy, it's I'm hunkered down here in my air-conditioned office. I finally put the air on. My house doesn't have central heat or air, so the rest of it's all kind of darkened up, and that does a lot. But oh my goodness, it's so hot. How are you doing down there in the South? I mean, you guys must be boiling.
It's pretty roasting. It's not as bad as it was a couple of weeks ago. Boy, it was really hot and humid, but yeah, it's still quite warm out. I haven't checked the temperature. Jen and I, our TV hardly is ever on. We just got rabbit ears, so on occasion, if we need to catch up with what's going on, we'll occasionally turn that sucker on. But so I couldn't tell you what this week's temperatures have been, other than just being very, very hot. So one of those things. Yep. We're not even getting the rain that we had. You know, for the first part of summer, it seemed like it was great. We didn't have to water. We were getting a regular interval of nice showers that would really water the garden down and keep the dust down, and it was great. And then lately, it's just been no rain either. So it's been kind of difficult.
Yeah, well, we are absolutely dog bone dry. I mean, if it weren't for drip irrigation, and thank God for that. I don't know if you use that or not, Whisper, but I always put it underneath the mulch, the straw, in my garden, so I can just turn it on and it'll drip right in there without wasting any water. So that helps tremendously. But the trees and everything are all just so dry. I think we've got a fire hazard up here in Virginia. It's a little scary. But luckily, our well is running, and it seems like I haven't heard anyone in the county that has run out of water. But it's kind of hard to kayak on scratchy bottoms there on the river because the rocks, the rivers are so low, and the rocks seem so high when there's not much water. Yeah. Hey, I was watching the following the chat room here, and I'm so sorry that some folks have lost some chicks to an opossum, and they caught and someone else caught them. But I was just I think you got my email. But that's what Richard Friedenberger is going to be talking about tomorrow, is opossums and chickens, and probably even a little bit of raccoons, because often opossums get blamed for what raccoons do. I found anyway. So that's what's coming up tomorrow, and he's and as you know, they had a whole article in Back Home magazine about possums. So that's something to look forward to.
They sure did. I that was one of my favorite articles. This last couple of issues was reading all about possums. We were having to deal with a few that would like take a late evening stroll along our fence line and drive the dogs nuts, and we found that a nice high-powered water hose does the trick, because our dogs will alert us when anything is actually coming to threaten the homestead, and so we will get out the high-pressured water hose and give them a squirt, and then off they go. So it's now that we've got the goats out there, we didn't have a problem with anything back when we did have the goats for several years, and then we took a little break from them for about a year, and then now we've got goats back. So hopefully, them being outside will also deter some of the critters that are trying to peek over the fence and see what's here. So that's kind of what we're.
Some of them could jump a fence. I mean, I had a sad call. It seems like when the weather gets dry, it seems like the predator problem goes up. Because a dear friend of mine that I'd given some chickens to had coyotes take out four of their, I think, sixth flock. And the rooster apparently had gone up against the coyotes because he came back 2 days after he disappeared. And a lot of his tail feathers were gone. It looks like he'd gotten in a little bit of a rear-end battle there. But anyway, he came back and was alive. And he had to have been defending his ladies. So, yeah, it's prime predator time, I think, right now in the U.S. So, batten up your coops and make sure your fences are secure. And, of course, consider night guard solar as a way to keep them out at night.
Pat, I'm going to have you call back in. You're breaking up a good bit. It's hard to understand, getting about every other word. So I'm not sure if it's a cell service or whatnot. So I'm just going to have you call back in, see if you can get just a little bit better line. And when you come back, we'll bring on our wonderful and special guest today. That today is Wednesday. It's the first Wednesday of July, and the first and third Wednesdays of every month. We have a brand new show we're really looking forward to, The Living Garden with Jane Jensen. And so today's topic, if I understand correctly, posted it on our Facebook page, is going to be basically, she's going to be talking and explaining how having a long winter and kind of a short spring affects our summer crops. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about today, I think, if I have that correct. But we're really excited because we've had expert gardeners on in the past, and Jane's all about year-round gardening, which is great. So we anticipate having her on again the first and third Wednesdays of every month, The Living Garden with Jane Jensen. Definitely looking forward to that, learning all kinds of great, great information, because most of you I know have gardens. And if you're like me, we don't have the greenest thumb on the planet, and we can always, always learn more. I know it's very interesting. Every year when I plant a garden, I look at it, I see what we get out of it. I'll have to admit, Jane does a really good job out in the garden, and we have a pretty productive garden every year. But a lot of times, if we have this insect or that insect or this problem or that problem or a drought, I look at it and I think, you know, Jen, if we had to survive off of this garden, I don't think we'd make it for very long. But, I mean, she does a great job and the garden is great. But just when you think about, you know, if that was, oh, man, just think about 100 years ago. 125 years ago, grocery stores, come on, folks. You lived off what you produced in your backyard. And I look at my backyard, and yes, if we had to survive off that, we'd spend more time out there, we'd be more cautious, we'd do, you know, a lot more things. But man, oh man, I look at it and I think I'd losing some weight if I had to depend on what came out of our backyard. So, but we got the goat's milk coming in. Hopefully, maybe in about a year. Looking forward to that continual, and I'm looking at having a year-round garden, and I'm hoping Jane will be able to teach us how to do that. because we here, we normally have a garden pretty much in the spring. We may replant in the fall, and that's about it. We've used to been putting the chickens in the garden area over the winter. Now that we have goats again, we'll put the goats in the garden, have them eat it all down to the nub to save our backs. Then we'll put the chickens in the garden for 2 or 3 months, have them eat all the weed seeds and whatnot and the bad bugs and fertilize for us. Then in the spring we'll till and, yep, you heard me, Pat, till. And then, we'll plant again for spring. So I'm really looking to learn a lot from Jane Jensen in this new episode about having a year-round garden. I'm going to go ahead and bring you back on, Pat. There you go, Pat. You did hear me say the magic word till. We're doing the best that we can on this as far as adding more mulch as we get it and the hay and the compost from the chickens. But again, like I said, we've had the same garden spot for about 8 years, and my tiller had a carburetor problem this year. Many of you remember I had to hire a buddy to come and actually till. The first person I hired to come out, he had a front tine tiller, didn't touch it. Front tine tiller. He was out there for about an hour, and he maybe literally scratched the surface, maybe got about an inch deep in some spots. That was it. Welcome to Georgia. Then we had somebody come in with a real, you know, the Mac Daddy Troy built rear tine tiller, and he got in there good and got it to where we could plant. But and that's even with adding. I mean, it seemed like for years we would add peat moss, we'd add soil additives, garden soil. Again, thanks from our chickens, thanks from the yard. And still, last year, after 8 years in the exact same spot with a front tine tiller, he got down about maybe an inch. So I wasn't about to break my wrist and my arms because it would have been a waste of time trying to plant. And even our onions didn't do good this year because they couldn't actually expand or grow because of the hard soil. So we're working on it, but I still anticipate having to till some until we can get it where we actually until we actually need it, or we wouldn't have any garden at all. So, but
Roy,
it's enough.
Are you doing raised beds? Do you have where you build the soil up and it doesn't just dissolve and sort of disappear into the path?
No, we're doing it like traditional farmers. I tell Jen, I'm like, when we go to South Georgia and see these fields of beautiful produce, they're not raised beds. So we do have a raised bed, but
production. I mean, real production. They have to use the tillers and all. You might try raised bed on top of that clay, because then when you put your mulch and the chicken litter and all that stuff in there, it'll tend to stay, and you won't be mixing in clay with good soil as it builds up.
We've talked about that. I know we've talked about putting some raised beds in our side yard, and she's got raised bed at her school. In fact, they came in and built one for every kindergarten classroom. So we're familiar with it. It does make it a little bit easier, but I guess I'm a little hard-headed. I go down to South Georgia to our farm, and nobody has raised beds, and their corn looks beautiful. Their tomatoes look great. Everything else looks so wonderful, and I'm thinking, and they don't, you know, that they a lot of them spray for weeds, but a lot of them, I look out in the cornfields, and there's plenty of weeds that are knee-high, and they've got beautiful corn, so I'm like, by golly, if they can do it, I can do it too. I don't know if they had raised beds in 1820, at least, you know, Little House in the Prairie, I didn't see raised beds. I'm not knocking them. I love them. I think they're awesome. I've seen some beautiful ones. But you know, I look out at these farms in South Georgia, and I'm like, I see no raised beds. And
they're using herbicides, though, instead of the natural weed control. I mean, it's all chemical fertilizers. I bet not one of those farms is certified organic, not one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not very many.
If you look at their soil, it's probably pretty rough. Probably more just a substance to hold the roots rather than actually a living soil. But anyway, I bet growing year round we'll talk about this. So
I hope so. Absolutely, yeah. I love it. In fact, let's go ahead and go live to the phone line here. Let me get over to the switchboard, and here we go. Jane, thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody's so excited about the new show we have lined up, and we want to thank you and welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here, and it's sure fun to listen to the talk that's going back and forth. And
can you tell we have an ongoing debate?
Yeah.
It's
well,
so funny.
West,
better be on my side, Jane.
Well, I don't know. I don't know whose side I'm on. I just, you know, around here, we're from Utah, and we don't. I do use raised beds in part of my garden because the soil heats up faster in the spring. But the rest of the garden, where the corn, the tomatoes, the big crops, the squash, I don't use raised beds because actually the soil dries out faster in a raised bed. Mm-hmm. That's why it heats up faster. So they're not for everything. And they're a lot of work. And to maintain them is a lot of work. You just kind of have to do what works. You talked about year-round. I'll tell you my year-round situation. We don't have a greenhouse, and so we garden from March until November. But the crops that we grow sustain us year-round. Of course, I do go to the store and buy a few this and that. But I liked what you said about could we survive from our gardens, and I think that is a very real scenario for at some future time. We may have to. What we'd have to do is learn to eat more seasonally. We'd have to learn to eat what we have and make do with what we have. So if you have some food storage along with the garden, then you're going to be fine. So I don't really know what to talk about except just what I've been doing in my garden. What do you want me to talk about?
Well, I think, no, perfect, Jane, no problem. We appreciate you joining us. I think today we were going to talk about, and I think Aaron had talked about the issues with our gardens being that we had kind of maybe a long winter and a very short spring before we started getting, 90-degree temperatures all of a sudden, and how the effects of kind of a long winter and a very short spring affects our summer gardens and what kind of, even though we may not know what to look at. So, maybe we can talk a little bit about that, how that has affected our summer gardens.
Yes, I can talk about that. That's the way it is every year for us. We have, the winter isn't necessarily longer than anybody else's, but our springs are usually very short. Mm-hmm. If it warms up, when it warms up, then it gets hot, like within a month or less. So, this year, we're about a month behind. My tomatoes are just barely starting to set on little teeny tomatoes. We're just a month behind.
Mm-hmm.
So what have we been doing? We've been weeding, thinning our onions, transplanting strawberry plants. This is a good time to do it. When you don't have anything else to do, you weed, right?
Exactly.
Thin your corn. We've been thinning our corn plants. Usually our corn is knee-high by the 4th of July, and mine, some of it was, but a lot of it was not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good time to thin it so that we have one plant per foot of row, 12 to 18 inches apart in the row, and then your row is 3 feet apart. My grandpa taught me to plant corn like that, and if you do that, give your corn plants plenty of room, then you get two full ears on every stalk. Wonderful. You get a lot more corn.
Can you give us those dimensions again for people who might want to write that down?
Yeah, 12 to 18 inches apart in the row. So you want a corn plant every 12 to 18 inches. If your soil is really rich and good, you can leave them a little closer. So a corn plant every 12 to 18 inches in the row, and then the rows 3 feet apart. Because corn just needs a lot of sun, and it just needs a lot of space. And if they're shading one another, you don't get any more ears. You just get more stalk, but that doesn't do you any good. You need the ears. So
spacing them a little bit further apart in our backyards may lead to having maybe two ears to the stalk. Because again, that goes back to what I was telling Pat a little bit earlier, is that when I got my corn seed, and back when I was just getting it from the store, not from the farm store down south, I would, I'd look at the package and they would say something like 8 to 12 inches apart, maybe a little bit further, and I'd be like, are you kidding me? I said, let's go down to the farm and drive through the cornfields, and we'd go through the cornfields, and they would be planting corn, look like about as close as they could get together, maybe 4 to 6 inches apart, all these stalks, and again, beautiful cornfields from the road, and I'm thinking, again, well, if they can do it, by goodness, I can do it as well, and so here I am in my backyard planting corn about 6 inches apart. And, of course, we do get just one ear per stalk, but, I go down and I try to compare my farm, and maybe I shouldn't do this, with really the big farms, and say, okay, hey, wait a minute, they don't have raised beds, their corn is like 4 inches apart, and yes, I know they're probably spraying with Roundup Ready, and they planted Roundup Ready and GMO and things like that, but I'm thinking, hey, you know, I got a smaller place, so I'm trying to save space and have more. And so that part of that is my, I guess, my mentality is that I look at the corn, I look at the tomatoes in these big, you know, production farms, and I'm thinking, well, looks like I can plant my tomatoes a little bit closer because they are too, but maybe not take everything else into account, what they're doing.
Yeah, I like that idea. I do that a lot of comparing. I look around a lot at everybody else's garden, and I think, what works? What's working and what isn't? I had a neighbor who planted his corn like that, very close together in the rows. And I remember he would get an ear here and there in the patch. He had tall stalks, but only an ear here and there. And I thought, man, that's not very much corn for all that seed that was used and all that nutrition that went into growing all those stalks that you're just going to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you'd use them as compost or something, but definitely look around and see what's working for other people. But yeah, plants are just like people. They need their elbow room. Onions.
I like that.
If you leave your onions too close together, they will be small. If you want nice big onions, you have to thin them. That's what I did last night until sunset. I was out thinning my onions. And then you just eat those wonderful little green onions. They're delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But and you have to do things in a timely manner at the right time. So I need to thin my onions before they start to suffer from being crowded. And then they just grow with abandon. They just are happy. They're happy onions. And so
that's one of the problems Jen and I have with our corn is that we'll go out and we're just not quite sure when to actually harvest it. We'll look and we'll think, maybe one more day, or maybe two more days. Let's get them a little bit bigger and a little bit juicier. Then one year we did that, and we just waited one more day, and then the squirrels got it. And then we just waited one more day, and there was something else wrong with it. So our biggest problem with our corn is just the timing of when actually to harvest those ears, because we just want to wait. And
that's tricky, and we have raccoons around here. So, but I have a solution to raccoons. And that's cayenne pepper. You sprinkle it around on the ground, or on the leaves, on the ears themselves. They get that on their hands and put it in their eyes and in their mouth. And they're out of there. They never come back. It's a great way to get rid of
Interesting. So cayenne pepper for the raccoons, mainly because
skunks. And sometimes even the deer have come and eaten my corn. But when the animals start getting in it, then you know it's ready. And hopefully you get it the day before they do. Sometimes it's right down to the line as to when you should harvest it. Sometimes I just have to peel an ear down and take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And after you do that, you can start to feel the tips. If the tips feel full, like there's really something in there, then I peel it down and look. And I think, okay, so that's what it looks like when it's ready. And just with a little practice, you get so you don't have to peel every one down.
Mm-hmm.
So, corn
now,
is a piece of delight.
Tell us a little bit about your summer garden right now. I know you're out west, I believe, in Utah. And tell us a little bit about, I think I've heard through the grapevine that you garden about a one-acre plot, if I'm correct, but I'm sure you'll tell us. And just kind of tell us a little bit about your garden, what you have planted there and the spatos based on the crops that you have right now.
Well, we've got, like you said, about an acre and a third, and I have people help me, thank goodness. It's intensively raised. My husband has a tractor, but I do everything else by hand. So he will till and carry heavy things around, and then I do the rest by hand. So we're out pulling weeds a lot. We transplant things with the shovel. We do most of it by hand. And we have 120 tomato plants with about 30 varieties. I love tomatoes, and I love to try those heirlooms. They are so good. And I just grow everything. I have a small business where I sell to 3 or 4 restaurants. And so they suggest to me things to try, and I've had so much fun learning about new things. Asian greens and arugula and all kinds of salad mix is one of my specialties. I've got all kinds of weird stuff in my salad mix, and the restaurants love it. I even throw in edible weeds and edible plants that grow wild, that come up in the garden. They're really delicious. Purslane and chenopodium and amaranth and lots of stuff.
You think amaranth is a weed?
What's that?
You consider amaranth as a weed?
Well, in my garden, a lot, everybody else does. I'm beginning to think it's an excellent plant.
Oh, so yeah, Robert Rodale thought it would be the plant that would help stay off famine for so many.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned Robert Rodale. I miss him so much. I'll never forget the thing that he said to me that had the greatest effect on my life, and that is, the greatest crop that you can plant in your garden is hope.
Oh,
I've never forgotten that. I love that. I love that man.
He sure made a difference in the world, didn't he? I mean,
yes,
what
did.
An influence he and J.I. had.
It was just
And for the listeners that don't, let me just say, Jane, for the listeners who don't know who Robert Rodale was, he was the publisher of Organic Gardening magazine and Prevention magazine. And they certainly helped shape America in a time that was really vulnerably being taken over by totally commercial agriculture. But he's one of my heroes, hands down. In fact, I have his picture here in my office.
Oh, that's good. Yep, I read his magazines faithfully. That's what gave me my foundation of what I know today. And I'll tell you, it's not all that much. I just keep learning and learning. But they got me started. There was nobody to teach me gardening. So I just took that magazine from about 1980 until 2004 when I quit because it had changed directions. And I love those articles they used to have on how to grow onions, how to grow the best peppers, what are the best tomato varieties. And, oh, my word, that's what got me going.
And it's so well written. I mean, he took journalism classes. Really, really, really nailed it right on the head. Active voice, simple sentences.
Now, let me go back to raised beds. I just have to say this, because out here, we dry out real fast. Mm-hmm. If we don't water it twice a week, it dies, whatever it is. So raised beds dry out, and I think the reason you don't see them much, maybe down, are you all in Georgia?
Yes, I am in Georgia, and Pat is in Virginia.
Okay. Well, because maybe of that, for that reason, and they also warm up. They get hotter. The soil would be hotter. In fact, I read an article once about something called waffle gardening, where you have indented beds. That's just the opposite of a raised bed. And they were suggested to be used out here in this part of the country to help conserve water. I thought that was an intriguing idea. You actually water inside these little areas, and the water stays in because there's a dike around the little edges of these little beds. Just an interesting thought. You don't have to have raised beds, but one thing you might try to do is incorporate more organic matter into your soil. If you have hard clay is actually very nutritious soil. It's good soil, but the problem is the mechanics of it, the physical problems of clay, where it cakes up and bakes in the sun. And so if you can stir or till or plow in as much organic matter over and over and over again, do it twice a year or as often as the beds are unused. And that will help break up that clay. That's the remedy for clay soil. It's also the remedy for sandy soil or for poor soil that has any kind of problem. Organic matter is the answer. Hopefully you can find stuff that's free so you don't have to put a lot of expense into it. Whatever you have locally available, like if you live along the coast, you can use seaweeds. Or just whatever you have.
Ladies, we're going to take a short break here. And, Pat, I'm trying to get a message to you here. If you can do me a favor and try to call back in, I'm trying to see, diagnose and see exactly which line the hum's coming from. And I'm going to ask when we come back if both of y'all can speak up just a tad. We're having some in the chat room a little bit of issues with hearing both of you guys. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we'll continue our very first show of The Living Garden with Jane Jensen. We'll be back right after this short commercial break.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in just any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends and neighbors with your very own custom labeled egg carton from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com and save 10% off your entire order by using the coupon code WHISPER. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. I got a great deal on a 4-star hotel using Priceline.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So glad you've joined us. The chat room is full with lots of great folks in there chatting about all kinds of subjects, not just gardening, backyard poultry, self-sustaining lifestyle, solar, wind power, water collection, goats, you name it. It's being talked about in our chat room. Come and join us if you can. All righty, this is what I'm going to do here. I'm going to bring Jane back on first just for a second. Okay, I'm going to put her back on mute, and then now I'm going to bring back Pat here. There we go. Okay, Pat, you are back live.
Okay, so, well, is this sounding better here, Whisper? I changed the offices and changed my phone again.
That is a lot better. That is absolutely
excellent.
Awesome. I think some of our background sound may be coming from Jane. So, of course, this is her first show, so we'll just talk with her about phone and lines and things like that before the next show here in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to bring Jane back on here. There we go. Perfect. Yep, got a little bit of a background noise there. So now we've kind of narrowed it down. And, Pat, you're sounding good. And, Jane, welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for staying with us. We got about 20, maybe about 15 minutes left. And so
tell us a little bit about the importance, in your opinion, and what you do at your garden there in Utah about soils, the importance of soil, what you do to prepare your soil before you plant, and soil testing, and tell us a little bit about your soil there at your garden.
Okay. Can you hear me now better?
Yes, that sounds great. Thank you, Jay.
Okay. I'm outside, and sometimes the jets fly over, so I'll try to just out-talk the jets here.
No problem.
Here in Utah, we have very alkaline soil, and it bakes in the sun, and the it's tough. So what we have done is just start by adding organic matter by the ton every fall, especially in the fall. That's, of course, the best time because you have all these leaves that everybody wants to get rid of. You have grass clippings. The best thing is to mow up those, I mean, use your lawnmower to chop up the leaves and mix it with grass clippings.
Mm-hmm.
And that, just put that on your garden and plow it in every fall. Put it on there 6 to 12 inches deep and plow it in.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts breaking down. If you do that every year, your garden soil will just improve and improve and improve. I also, the only thing I buy, if I can get animal manure, I will. But it's pretty hard to find these days around here. So the best animal manure would be cow or sheep or chicken, bird manure. Horse manure goes through a horse real quick, and the seeds come through undigested. So I wouldn't advise horse manure unless you can compost it and let all those seeds germinate and sprout, and you stir them up and that way. But cows have four stomachs, and they chew, you know, there's nothing that comes through a cow that will germinate. The same with birds. They have gills, not gills, gizzards, sorry, and they grind up every seed, and things don't come through and germinate with chickens either. So your chicken manure is wonderful. I used to have chickens, and I sure miss them. Anyway, so we put that on if we can get it, but if we can't, I put all my kitchen scraps on in the fall, and we just till it in, and we let it compost in place. It's called sheet composting. And by spring, that's pretty much broken down. We start planting in early March, and sometimes it's not quite all the way broken down. If I put it on a little too thick, sometimes I have a problem. But if sometimes I have to watch where I dump it. You know, if you dump too much in one place, then it takes a little longer for it to be broken down by the next growing season. But as we work it, by June, it's broken down, and it looks like chocolate cake crumbs. That's the beauty of leaves. Leaves, I think leaves are the thing that we don't realize the benefit of leaves. All different kinds of leaves. They bring up minerals from deep in the earth, and there's so many kinds of trees. Deciduous leaves I'm talking about. Evergreen, like pine needles, they're kind of slow, and I would not plow those in. I would put those in places, though, where you want to maintain a permanent mulch. I've got places like that in my yard. I've even got a place for walnut leaves. I don't know if you're aware that walnut leaves contain jugalone, a substance that will kill other plants, not all other plants, but quite a few of them. So I just put those in a place where I want to kill the weeds. And it does kind of a half-baked job, but that's half the weeds I don't have to pull. So I do. Maybe you can find a use for all these things in your own yard.
Jane, how long, can I ask a question here, Whisper? When you do the walnut leaves, how long does that jugalone stay in the soil that keeps killing weeds? Does it decompose over a season, or is it something that's there forever?
I think it decomposes after about a year, but I'm not sure. I guess you'd have to test the soil. Also, you can look at what kind of weeds are growing and tell. I do see some weeds coming up through it. Like midsummer of the following year that I had put them on. So I think it does break down in time. Now, under a walnut tree, you're going to have a layer of leaves laid down every fall, so that would pretty much kill everything under your walnut tree if you don't rake them up and do something with them. So Anyway, but just keep adding that organic matter. If you shred it, it breaks down faster. That's always an advantage. I don't make compost pile. We have a compost pile, and my husband stirs it with a tractor two or three times a year. But I can't turn a compost pile. I don't have a very strong back. So I don't want to use up all my grace points just stirring the compost. I better use it picking strawberries or something like that.
See, Jane, you need to get chickens, and they'll help turn your compost pile for you. You just throw some scratch in there on that heap, and they'll just bring it down and aerate it and clean it, and then you just pile it back up.
That's true. I really miss my chickens. We used to feed them big wrapper cabbage leaves and cauliflower leaves, and the yolks would be as bright orange as you could imagine. They were delicious.
I can't imagine.
And I'd pay my kids a penny a head to catch the grasshoppers and throw them into the chickens. They loved that. Lots of fun. So, anyway, that's how we build the soil.
Jane, tell us real quick. I got two questions for you. Number one, why don't you have chickens anymore? What happened, and what can we do to get you some more chickens?
Yeah, good question.
It wouldn't take a lot because I loved them, but I found that I was the only one doing the work. So I just got tired of working so hard and decided to try to simplify my life. So that's why I discontinued chickens. And it wouldn't take much to talk me into it.
Well, don't be surprised then if all of a sudden you get a call from your local post office and they say, you have 25 pullets here waiting on you, Miss Jensen, courtesy of the Chicken Whisperer and RandallBerkey.com.
Oh, well, I'll know who did it.
Absolutely. And my second question for you is, I know that you have an entire line video DVD series called The Living Garden with Jane Jensen. If you would, take a moment. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that whole video series that people can go and purchase, take a look at, just see if they're interested in doing that. Tell us. I know it's, I believe it's, let me see it back here, livinggardenseries.com. Now, I'll tell that again to everybody, livinggardenseries.com. They can go there and take a look at all these great classes and sessions you've taught on garden. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was an interesting experience. My friend Aaron came down here from Idaho to film that. He came every week. He worked so hard, and he would film a little of this and a little of that through all of the stages of preparing the soil, planting, thinning, weeding, watering, harvesting, replanting, storing. Oh, he got a lot of it on film. It's mostly just, I'm just trying to be self-sufficient on my own piece of land. And I love it. I'm not totally self-sufficient, but I just feel like, you know, if the system goes down, the grocery store system, for one thing, I it wouldn't bother me that much. I'd have to do without avocados and lemons and bananas, but everything else I can raise myself. And it is a wonderful feeling. Now, for those who don't have so much room, I do have plenty of room, but if you're limited on space, you just make a list of your favorite vegetables and you grow what you can fit in your plot. Giving them all plenty of room, of course. You have to, when you're planning your garden, you've got to visualize the mature plant and give it the space that it will need to produce. But, so this series is just kind of like living in my yard for a year, seeing what I've done in the garden, all these crazy little tricks and all of my garden junk, you know, that I use, trellises and milk jugs with the bottoms cut out and all that kind of thing. It's great fun, and I just hope that it helps somebody, to give somebody out there some ideas as to what they can do without spending a lot of money. And just, just to use what's around you. So many things we throw away are really quite useful items. And then, you know what intrigues me is, why do people go out and buy fertilizer? They go out and pay this money for the little white granular fertilizer, which is NPK, and they just send out their grass clippings in the garbage and their leaves and their kitchen scraps. They run down the disposal. We are very
right.
wasteful in our lifestyle. Our lifestyle is not conducive to a sensible use of the resources that we have at our hands.
Mm-hmm.
I wish somebody would hook my disposal up to the compost pile with a big long pipe, you know, and grind it up and send it out there. Wouldn't that be a good idea? Somebody needs
to
invent
that. That'd be a great idea.
In my understanding, a lot of that commercial fertilizer, the bags, the 888, the 10-10-10, a lot of that is
yeah.
is petroleum-based, isn't it, Pat?
Yes. Yes,
that's right. That's right.
It is. Do you know where it came from, where the whole idea came from? After World War II, this is my understanding of it. After
mm-hmm.
World War II, there was a lot of nitrate laying around the country that they were using for explosives. And some
That's right.
guy or group of people decided, hey, why don't we take that and make it into a fertilizer and sell it to the farmers? Here's this stuff laying around that we don't know what to do with. It's not sellable. Let's make it into a fertilizer and sell it to the farmers. I'd like to take the guy out and shoot him. Because I think that was diabolical. Because at
that's
that
super
point,
bright, wouldn't it? All that nitrate,
yeah,
and the tip blow them up instead of using it for fertilizer.
Yes, at that point, that to me is the time when the soils began to deteriorate big time. Not that
mm-hmm.
they weren't deteriorating before from poor farming practices, but that they, on a whole country scale, the soils began to deteriorate at that time because they weren't putting organic matter back in. They decided this was easier. It's a lot easier to spread that than to try to spread manure. Have you ever seen a manure spreader?
Yes.
We have those around. It flips it all over, and it gets caked, and hunks get stuck in there, and it's stringy and stinky, and it's a big mess. But it sure is better for the soil and for the life forms that are in the soil than the harsh chemicals. It's sustainable, where the other way is not.
Did you happen to know that a manure spreader, the companies that make manure spreaders, I mean, they've been around for forever, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, out of all the companies we've researched, a manure spreader company, and this is crazy, it's the only company that will not stand behind their product.
They won't? What do you mean? You mean
you're talking to... You're talking to farmers here.
You mean
he means because of the manure. They don't want to. Yeah.
Oh, I get it now. All right.
Yeah.
I guess you don't want to be within 100 feet of it, any direction, because I've seen them work, and they just flipping the stuff all over as they go along.
They do.
That
they
was
do.
A good
Sling
that
it out,
was a
don't
good
they?
Joke.
Oh,
we have some really, really awful jokes here on the show, Jane. You'll,
yeah.
you'll find out as we go along. They're pretty, some of them are pretty basic.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to make us laugh.
Here's another one from Robert Rodale. Compost happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
I guess
it
that's
does.
A joke, but it's true. It's a true principle, too. It's a fun
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I've got
right,
one,
some
too.
People make,
because,
go
ahead. Go ahead, Pat.
No, no, you go ahead, Whisperer.
Another little joke I like to use sometimes, if somebody is acting a little snooty patootie, I'll say, you know what? She doesn't think her compost bin stinks.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Oh.
The people on that side
yeah.
of town, they don't think their compost bin stinks.
You know what? I love being a farmer. I'm just a my I don't have a farm. It's more of an overgrown garden gone wild, but I think like a farmer. I'm so glad. I'll take that any day to anything else.
That sounds like another video. Wild natural garden gone wild, right there.
Well, you could just that's just another name for the livinggardenseries.com.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of wild stuff you'll see if you tune into that. Because my garden, there's a lot of wild plants in it that I'm just learning about medicinal plants and edible wild plants, and I'm finding out, man, there's a lot to eat out here. Even if nothing is coming on yet, there's a lot to eat. I've learned to love dandelions. They are God's promise to us that we will not starve.
That's a good one. That's a good
and
one.
And how much money
so
do
you eat? Do you eat the roots and the leaves and all?
I just eat the leaves. I use them in salads and in green drinks, and I sell them to my restaurants. They love it.
That is very cool. Well, ladies, we are about out of time. We have about 2 minutes left. It's been a wonderful time chatting all about gardening. We've learned lots of information, and this is the very first episode of episodes coming up that we're really looking forward to, The Living Garden with Jane Jensen. It'll be the first and third Wednesdays of every month, and we'll have all kinds of great topics coming to you from Jane's experiences working her garden, selling her hard work to the local restaurants in town, and we don't want you to reinvent the wheel. We'll bring you tips every show about what can save you time, and definitely visit livinggardenseries.com, and you'll see all kinds of great things that Jane has done. So, Jane, thank you so much for joining us today. We're very excited. We had a great time, great conversation as always, and we'll see you back here in a couple of weeks.
Oh, thank you very much. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Jane. That was wonderful.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. So there's just kind of a sneak peek of what the what we've got in store for you, just a wealth of information, and you can see a lot of that information that she shares at livinggardenseries.com. She's going to be here the first and third Wednesday of every month, all kinds of different topics from soil to fertilizer to gardening to pruning, you name it, for our year-round gardens. I'll be looking at as far as this fall, what she shares with us of what we should be planting, how we should be planting it, and what time we should be planting it, and then how to tend to it. So we're definitely looking forward to this series on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Pat, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to all in the chat room and our sponsors. We've got about 58 seconds left. I'll turn it over to you, Pat.
Okay, great. Well, again, thanks to all our sponsors for their support. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for our sponsors. And, of course, thanks to Jane Jensen's of Living Gardens for sharing about growing food and enough food to support yourself. I mean, she really knows a lot about how to get those plants going. And I want to add a little thanks to Robert Rodale, because he's one of my heroes, and just thanks for him for being a way shower for all of us to be more organic and healthy. Thanks to the chat room Chickeners for clucking along. And, of course, Andy Snyder, God bless you. We appreciate so much about what you've done for the chicken movement and about being you. Blessings to all, many, many blessings to all, and may the flock be with you evermore. Bye-bye.